Yeah, man. Tell you what, what are some awesome lyrics, right? Even when I don't see it, you're working. Yeah, go ahead and grab a seat. Man, it's so good to have you guys with us this weekend. My name's Kurt. If we've not had a chance to meet, and if it's your first time with us, man, we, as you hear say all the time around here, we hope it's not your last time. And so we're in week two of this series called Build Different. And I don't know, I hope that you're encouraged by what we're seeing. We're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel on the pandemic. And obviously, we still have a little bit of, kind of things that need to happen in our world. But we're seeing that happen. And we're seeing it happen in our community. We're seeing vaccine rates going up. And that's all going to help us get back to the things that we love. We're seeing that here at Crosspoint. I mean, we're, we've had a lot of things that have kind of been on hold. And if you are a part of our kids' teams around here, you know that we are resurfacing surveying adults to see if you're ready to engage. And so if you have not filled that survey out, go ahead and fill that out so we can make a decision later this month in terms of when kids' environments are going to open. If you're not a part of our kids' environment teams and you'd like to be a part of one of these fabulous teams, there's an opportunity. You can go to the app and hit the button or the service stream and hit the button and join one of these teams. And CSM is going to be resuming in-person student gathering small groups the 1st of May on site here. So I mean, just a lot of cool things that are happening as we're beginning to come out of this. Now, here's something really cool. Tomorrow, we've got a meeting with a school in Westfield to try to nail down our location for our Westfield campus. So that is super exciting. Yeah, you can clap for that. It's certainly something to clap about. And we'll make decisions here very soon as we've got to see a clear path to in-person launch for Westfield because that's so, so critical for a new campus. And so we're hoping that happens later this fall. So, so many things that I hope you're encouraged by. I know I'm encouraged by. And we're doing this and trying to continue to do what's best for people, what's best for our community. So thank you for just continuing to embrace that. Now, in this series, as we've kind of been saying, we didn't choose the pandemic. The pandemic kind of chose us. But the one thing we can do is choose how we're going to exit the pandemic. And let me just kind of define that a bit, because, there's a lot of ways we could think about that. When we say we choose how we exit the pandemic, we're not saying, well, we're just going to choose, this bravado or this reckless, just screw it. I'm going to just say, I'm done with the pandemic and I'm going to do whatever I want to do. We're not saying that at all. In fact, I think as we're going to see this weekend, part of exiting the pandemic and actually experiencing some new growth and building different is actually embracing the reality of where we've been and where we are. And the reality is we're still in a pandemic. And so it's not about ignoring reality. As we explored last weekend, we've been asking the question, how do we get to the other side of the pandemic and be better for it? Or are we just going to get to the other side and go back to the same behaviors, the same patterns, basically the same life? Because, see, the pandemic's kind of revealed some things to us. It's revealed that there's some vacant spaces in our lives. I mean, there's some vacant spaces in our relationships, in our relationship with our kids, our families, in our spiritual lives, maybe in terms of just what our life is about and the things we fill our life with. And so we're at a very unique moment in history where we have the opportunity to decide how we're going to rebuild and whether we're going to rebuild with all the old ways or if we're going to build with new bricks. And so, we get to decide that. Are we going to use new bricks when it comes to the way we parent and we grow in our parenting? Are we going to build new bricks in terms of our relationships and our marriages? Are we going to build with new bricks when it comes to, developing new patterns and the ways we fill our calendar and the ways we do our work? Are we going to, rebuild with new bricks when we think about our faith? I mean, let's be honest. I think one of the big things many of us have discovered through the pandemic is there were some vacant places in our faith. And so, again, we maybe have taken some steps to grow and fill those in, and we get to choose. Are we going to continue to build with new bricks, or are we going to go back to the old patterns and behaviors? And so there's so many ways that you and I are going to have the opportunity as we come out of this to step into new things. Now, one of the resources that we're kind of using throughout this series is from one of my favorite authors, a guy by the name of Dr. Tim Elmore. In fact, his blog, just to kind of give a shout-out to it, is growingleaders.com/... That never gets old for me right there, /blog. It's one of my favorite blogs. I mean, it's the one, whenever he updates it, it's the one thing I read every time there's an update. And so I recommend you check it out. It's just great with leadership and being relevant and understanding where we are and how we equip, the next generation and tools for ourselves. And there's a book that Tim recently wrote called The Pandemic Population, which is outstanding. In fact, we've got some of these in the building. If you want to grab one on your way out, they're in the Commons, and there's a little QR code right inside. You can pay for it when you get get your car, it's 10 bucks, or you can pay for it when you get home, or if you can't afford it, then just take it, you know, because we think it's that important a resource. If you're tuning in online, there's a button, and you can, it'll take you right to Amazon, so you can order online if you'd like to do that. And the pandemic, subtitle of the pandemic population is 8 strategies to help Generation Z rediscover hope after coronavirus. And so it's really written for how do we help our students and our teens and our college students and our young adults, you know, move forward in this season that has just been unprecedented for them. But I've discovered that there's tools in this thing for all of us. I mean, it certainly has helped me as a parent, but it's helped me as a leader know how to help others and my and how to navigate myself getting through to some new places. So I encourage you to pick it up. Now, I had the opportunity about a month ago to actually do a one-on-one with Tim Elmore. One of my friends who attends Crosspoint here used to serve with him, used to be in a ministry with him. I had no idea, and she kind of surprised me with a one-on-one meeting with him. It was just an absolute blessing. So we, as you can see right here, we spent about 45 minutes in a Zoom call, and it was lots of fun, learned all kinds of things about what he's discovering in the pandemic and things we're working through. And it was just so cool. In fact, my kids, when they heard about this, they're like, Dad, he's like one of your 3 favorite people in the world. I'm like, right? And they're like Seth Meyers, Jimmy Fallon, and Tim Elmore. And so when I told him that, I think he thought I was blowing sunshine, but I wasn't. Like, that's really the order of my 3 most favorite people. If I could spend an hour with, those would be the 3 guys. And so in his book, The Pandemic Population, he references an article that I think gives us a really good visual picture of where we've been, where we are now, and where we're going. The article is titled, Leading Beyond the Blizzard, Why Every Organization is Now a Startup. And in this article, Andy Crouch and his research team, they talk about how we went from, initially, this kind of felt like a blizzard, and then it moved to kind of a long winter. And then we realized, well, we're actually in kind of this mini ice age or this little ice age. And so think about this. Initially, you know, when the pandemic hit, it's like everybody was shut in their homes. That's what you do in a winter, right? What's your job when a blizzard hits? It's to stay indoors. And you stay indoors and take care of immediate needs until, you know, the blizzard passes. And usually that's a week, you know, the results of the blizzard, maybe 10 days, and everybody comes out and resumes their life. The problem was that the researchers that were developing this idea here, they said, when we talked to the public health officials, none of them saw this as a blizzard. They said this is way longer than a blizzard. Instead, they suggested this is kind of like a long winter season. And we know winter might begin with a blizzard, but winter's more than just a blizzard. It's not a single event. It's like multiple events. And then ultimately, you know, as we continued through this past year, we began to realize this isn't even just a season, like 4 or 5 or 6 months. It's like an era. And it began to take on the term this kind of new little ice age. And these guys predicted this would go on for like 12 to 18 months or more. And what's fascinating is they made these predictions back in March of 2020, and it's been almost spot on. And so if we want to build with new bricks, we have to think differently. In fact, they gave us a cool little summary statement I want to just share with you from this article. They said, you know, the priority of leaders must be to set aside their confidence and their current playbook as quickly as possible. Write a new one that honors their mission and the communities they serve. Make the most of their organization's assets, their people, financial capital, social capital, leaning on relationship and trust. And let me just say, if you're a C-level leader, you know what that means if you are one. Man, take a screenshot of this. I would highly recommend this article. I've been sending it to many of my friends who make decisions for companies, for lots of people under them. And this article is just gold. And, you know, this era that we've entered into, we've realized, like, it's caused us to interact differently, to handle work differently, to shop differently. And now you and I get to decide if we're going to build differently out of it, if we're going to build with new bricks. Now, speaking of blizzards and winter, long winters and ice age, a couple months ago, I had this really cool moment where I was prepping for a weekend. I begin that on Tuesday each week, and I was sitting in my sunroom at the back of our home, which is usually where I prep, and it's usually kind of a creative space for me. I was looking out over our backyard. We have a pond behind our house, and in the middle of the pond were these 2 swans, and I didn't really think anything about it until I kept noticing. Every time I'd come back, I'd leave to get a drink or coffee, come back, and all of a sudden, they're still there, stuck in the same spot, and I look a little closer, and these swans had been frozen into the pond. In fact, look at this photo right here. It's like the ice had slowly crept in overnight, and I don't know if they didn't see it. I don't know if they didn't know it. Maybe this happens all the time, and I've not seen it, but it was just amazing. And so, in fact, I called our kids in. They were still virtual at the time at home. I said, kids, come look at this. You need to check out what's going on here. And of course, it created all kinds of inquiry and wonder for them. They're like, Dad, are they dead? I'm like, I don't know. They're like, are they sleeping? Because like, like we can't see their heads. You know, I mean, they're like, have they been here before? Which we didn't know. I mean, I'd be like really freaked out if I were frozen in, but they were sleeping. Like they didn't seem to be overly anxious yet. I don't know what their heart rate was. I mean, they may have been like, you know, beating out of their chest. We just couldn't see it. And so there was just so many things going on and so much learning in this moment. And then I had this kind of aha moment where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is kind of like what we've been in right here. Where all of a sudden, there's been this encroachment from the outside in, and we're kind of stuck, and we're iced in with nowhere to go. And so I actually sent this photo to some of my creative friends and some of our content developers here at Crosspoint. Just said, hey, like, what are the lessons in this? And they started peppering all kinds of things back. And, you know, it was everything from, like, how slow and developing, seemingly fragile barriers can actually encroach. And if we don't, like, kind of address them initially, they have a way of binding us in to things like, you know, perspective is everything. I mean, where you sit really kind of dictates, you know, maybe what you're seeing. And we thought this was a big deal. And we were, like, worried for the swans. And yet, maybe they're not worried for themselves. I don't know, could they step up on the ice and just walk out? But they weren't. We didn't know. Yeah, all the way to, you know, the whole idea of if you stay in the same spot too long and you're not moving, you're not growing, you're not, you know, having some action activity, then you get frozen and spiritually and mentally and physically. I mean, so many lessons. I mean, on there are like 15, 16 lessons that our team was kind of all texting in. And then 3 or 4 hours later, this happened right here. Take a look at this. They just all of a sudden went back to like what they normally do. They swam through the ice. They could have like stepped up on it or they could have flown out, but all of a sudden it's like the ice began to melt around them and they just broke through and swam through. And all of a sudden I just again had this aha moment. And I realized this is like an amazing kind of discovery right here, and that's this, that when the stress goes off and when the urgency is removed, we tend to all gravitate back to what we know, just like the swans. And this is what I want us to look at this weekend. I want us to kind of dig into how we not only respond to adversity when we're in it, but how do we respond to adversity when we begin to come out of it? And to be honest, if we look back, most of us probably wish we could have some do-overs in the last year, right? We wish we would have been a little more prepared. We could have handled things a little different. Jim Collins, in his book, if you're familiar with this book, Good to Great, he introduces this principle called the Stockdale paradox. And it really is a paradox. It's based on a guy, an admiral, Jim Stockdale, and he was a prisoner of war in Vietnam. And basically, he talks about the power of hope when you're in really adverse conditions. And he talks about what enabled him to deal with the atrocities and the torture and even the death all around him when he was a prisoner of war. In fact, here's what he said. He said, I never lost faith in the end of the story. I never doubted not only that I would get out, but also that I would prevail in the end and turn the experience into the defining event of my life, which in retrospect, look at this, he said, I would not trade. And what's interesting is when Jim Collins interviewed Stockdale, he asked him, well, what's the character traits of the prisoners of war who don't make it out? Like, how are they different than you? And he said, there's one thing, they're all optimists. You're like, optimists? That's the trait that causes them not to be able to get out? He's like, yeah, they're all optimists. See, they believe that, we're going to get out of here by Christmas. I mean, yeah, it's hard now, but by Christmas we'll be out. And then Christmas comes and Christmas goes and they're still there. And a whole year passes and Christmas comes and Christmas goes and they're still there. And they end up dying of a broken heart because they lost hope. And so this insight is huge when we think about how do we exit adversity. See, Elmore, he puts it this way. He said, you must never confuse the faith, which is the belief that you will prevail in the end, which we cannot ever let go of, with the discipline to confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, which we can't ignore. And so this is why the Stockdale paradox is a paradox indeed, because it's about confronting the harsh realities. Hey, listen, this is where we are. We can't deny this, but also holding on to the hope at the end of the story. And this is where resilience comes in. And see, if we're going to rise from the ashes as we exit this pandemic and the health hazard and the economic downturn, all the things we've experienced, we're going to have to be practiced in the art of resilience. And resilience really includes two chief ingredients. You know, first you have ambition, and ambition's like the strong resolve to reach a goal. In fact, you can't get out of something if you don't have a strong resolve. Whenever somebody is in crisis and we do some counseling, whether it's marriage counseling or individual counseling, one of the questions I always ask, I'll say, what do you want? Because I want to know, like, do you actually want things to be different? How bad do you want it? Because it's usually going to be difficult to get. You have to have that ambition. See, let's be honest, no one bounces back unless they really want to. And then the second ingredient is adaptability. See, there has to be this capacity to flex and to kind of modify the original approach in order to stay on course. Nobody bounces back if they don't have the flexibility and the adaptability to actually change and continue to adjust to what they're facing. It's turning adversity into opportunity. Instead of complaining, it's saying, hey, I'm going to be creative and I'm going to create out of this. Now, as we think about this, I want to kind of give you a picture of how this has looked in one of my friends' lives. I've surrounded myself with a number of guys specifically that are just encouraging, that speak courage and put courage into me, and I kind of do the same for them over the last number of months. And there was just some amazing stuff that kind of came out of my friend Scott Fussell's experience as he and his family went through this season. And he's the founder of the Shift Initiative, and there's just been some cool things happen in that. So I want you to hear a bit of our conversation. So take a look at this interview right here.
Hey, Scott, you know, I know in the middle of this weighty season that we've all been feeling, you made a very intentional decision to begin to shift your thinking and to use this season to create, to grow something different, not just while in what we were in, but how did that begin to take place and form for you?
Yeah, I remember early on when this is one of our first conversations. This is probably early April, right after kind of the world kind of changed for all of us. I remember asking, you know, how are you doing? And how are you feeling right now? And you shared with me that you get a little excited and invigorated when there's a little bit of chaos around. And I was like, man, what a incredible shift in perspective. What a game changer that can be when you start to look at things differently. You can either sit in the chaos and the stress, the anxiety, the uncertainty, or you can use that as an opportunity to do differently, to think differently, to create and to innovate differently. And that shift in perspective was an absolute game changer for me. And it allowed me and our family to see and do and experience things in people that we would not have otherwise.
You know, I asked you the question. I said, how have you thrived? Because you're somebody that's thrived. I mean, you've been at home, working from home, very little outside connection, yet you've used this season to thrive. What are some of those walkouts that you began to discover as a result of that?
Yeah, I will say it's not been all sunshine and rainbows, right? I worked from home before the pandemic, and then I was an early adopter to kind of isolating myself and making sure that I was staying safe and healthy and making sure that I was helping those around me stay safe and healthy. So I've been here for a minute. So I don't want it to sound like it's been perfect, but I will tell you that shift in attitude that we talked about earlier, kind of leaning into the chaos and a few other things that I learned along the way really helped me not just survive the past year or so, but really to thrive in it. And, you know, I learned pretty quick that I needed to connect differently. I'm a full contact friend, so I missed, you know, coming to CrossPoint every week. I missed seeing people out in the community. So those things really had an immediate impact on me early on. But so it really helped me to learn, man, you better connect differently and you better do so with some intentionality. And because I started thinking about ways to do so with purpose, and again, with intentionality, that enabled me to kind of overcome that initial shock of being in isolation to some degree. So, and that, you know, whether that's a Zoom happy hour or getting engaged with a small group, just that commitment to connecting differently and connecting with intentionality was a major, major key to kind of navigating these waters and doing so in a healthy way. Also started prioritizing joy and prioritizing those who also prioritize joy. I hit my quota on negativity a long time ago. So if you're just coming into the room and you're sucking all the energy out of the room, I've started to weed those people, those relationships, those ideas kind of out of my life a little bit. And that's not saying I'm not here for people when they have a challenge or that I don't support other people, because I'm all about that. But if you're just going to come in the room and you're going to complain about what your school is not doing for you, what your church isn't doing for you, and what your community is not doing for you, I don't have a lot of time for that in my life. So I'm prioritizing joy and I'm prioritizing people who do the same. And then last thing I did, as I've gotten a lot smarter, I'm kind of picturing, started looking at my head as kind of like it's the lawn, right? If you can plant really good grass seed, if you can fertilize that seed, then eventually the good grass kind of overcomes the crabgrass and the weeds. So what I'm learning is, man, if I put the more good thoughts in my head, the more information, the more accurate information, I should say, the more impactful and uplifting relationships I have between the space between my ears, the better I am.
I know an additional thing that was really big for you was to serve bigger.
Yeah. And
as a result of that, the Shift Initiative really benefited and something that's very needed right now in terms of mental health in our community. Tell us a little bit about what's been going on with the Shift Initiative over the last few months.
Well, as you know, we were in a mental health epidemic in our country before the pandemic. And then, you know, as COVID has really created this sense of isolation for many, it's just really exaggerated what was already an issue. So for those that don't know about the Shift Initiative, we're really creating a connection point to relationships and resources to help people shift the way they think, talk, act, and care about mental health and wellness. So we had a lot of momentum going into February and March last year. We just come off a really wonderful strategic planning meeting with a lot of leaders in the community, and then COVID hit. So it was a frustrating time, but what it actually enabled us to do is to hit reset and hit pause and get our organizational house in order. So we were able to get our board more fully developed. We were able to get more aligned with local partners. We were able to, you know, kind of really chart out where we're headed and what we can do for the community. So hopefully we've provided some of that hope to others in our community. And so we've got some big things coming up in May as part of Mental Health Awareness Month. And we're excited to share those coming up in the next few days as well. So it's been, you know, it has been a really hard year for everyone. And if we can be a little bit of a soft place to fall for people that need that support, or they want to learn how they can support somebody who might be really struggling, man, we want to come alongside you on that journey. And we've been able to do that this year, which has been, again, when you serve differently, you serve bigger, you see the results. You have people tell you the impact that you had on them. That's where the money is. I mean, that's where the change that does in your head and your heart is extraordinary. So you can't focus on all the negative voices that are oftentimes inside our own head. You can't focus on what's not going well for you. You have to focus on what is going well. And when you serve bigger, you serve differently, and people tell you how you've impacted them, that's impactful. That matters.
Wow. Let's thank Scott for that. Man. You know, he mentioned a couple times there was a shift in his perspective, which is so important as we think about exiting adversity. In fact, I want to kind of take a look and help us kind of get a glimpse into a guy's life that was just amazing at this. And it's somebody that we talk about here at Crosspoint all the time. It's a guy by the name of the Apostle Paul. And if you're newer to Crosspoint or tuning online for the first time, the Apostle Paul is somebody who wrote more than half of the New Testament. He wrote these letters to these Christians all over kind of the Mediterranean rim in the first century. And this letter we're going to look at today, it's a letter to these Christians in the city of Corinth. I want us to just look at one little excerpt. It talks about something difficult that happened to him, all right? And how in the midst of that, he found strength to not only get through it better on the other side of it, but at the same time to actually find strength in the midst of it and to thrive in the midst of this difficult, difficult thing. And you might go, well, what's the difficult thing he had? I mean, it might not be as difficult as what I've been in. Well, we don't fully know what this thing is he's referencing, that other than I can tell you, Paul knows a little bit about adversity, all right? Paul is somebody who, when he began to plant these churches all up and down the Mediterranean rim in the first century, he jumped on a boat, he'd get off the boat, he often got arrested for his convictions, when he was sharing, put in jail, sometimes beaten, he'd get back in the boat, he was shipwrecked, he'd get off again, start more new startups, get back in the boat again, shipwrecked not three times, but four times shipwrecked, but he continued to do these startups and to continue to develop forward. And think about this, he did it without electricity and Advil, all right? So like he just knows something about adversity. So we don't know exactly what it was, but he can speak about adversity. Now, I don't know what everyone's faith story is in here. What I do know is we have people all over the map spiritually at Crosspoint, tuning in online, and we love that. We've created Crosspoint to be that way. And so some of you, you've been a Jesus follower like as long as you can remember. And then others of you, like you don't even know if you believe in God. And if you're in that camp, like you're not even sure what you believe, I think you're going to like the Apostle Paul because he kind of was in that camp for a good part of his life as well until something changed. And so even if you don't have a belief, I think there's some things here that are some good wisdom that you can learn from Paul. So for those of us who are Jesus followers, my hope is as we look at this story and this little glimpse into his life, you go, wow, yeah, this is what I need. I need this kind of perspective change. And so here's what Paul writes in 2 Corinthians, beginning in chapter 12, verse 7. He says, therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, which I love that, it's like, he's like, hey, this is a normal guy. He's not some spiritual pillar that isn't like you and I. He becomes conceited just like you and I can. He says, therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh. All right, he was given an ailment. He was given a condition. And we don't know what it was. It probably wasn't a pandemic. What we do kind of know from piecing different things from his writings together is our best guess it was some kind of discomfort, some kind of physical pain. It could have been migraines. It could have been rheumatoid arthritis. It could have been some kind of cancer or tumors. We don't fully know. We just know it was some kind of physical discomfort. And I love that he says it's a messenger from Satan to torment me. I mean, that's just fantastic. Now, I know some of you, you're like, yeah, my kids, man, they can be a thorn in my side. I don't think you would turn around and be like, yeah, they're like Satan to torment me, right? So like, I think he's talking about a whole different realm than just some kind of, you know, modern inconvenience like you and I sometimes may experience. Hopefully you don't talk about your kids that way. If you do, like you do you, all right? We're not going to judge you. But Paul, he knew adversity. And so in Paul's case, this was some kind of pain, some sort of physical discomfort that was bothering him. And you and I, we've experience that, right? This has maybe been the most troubling part of the pandemic for us. Let's be honest. I mean, some of us have lost loved ones, right? So I don't want to discount. Some of us have really had a lot of loss. Some of us have contracted COVID and we've dealt with symptoms and we've kind of dealt with that pain. But let's be honest, most of us, it's just been a discomfort. And it struck like at the core of the American way, right? Like the core, let me rephrase it. It struck at the core of the middle class, upper class, like American way of comfort. Like, because we like comfort, like, don't make me uncomfortable. And we see this even in our angst over masks over the last 13 months, right? Like, which I just don't, like, fully get. In fact, I love how Bill Gates put it recently. He was on Seth Meyers about a month ago, and he just had a really fascinating look at the whole mask thing. In fact, take a look if you didn't see this.
You know, the ability to show leadership on masks and now, you know, encouraging vaccine uptake. You know, I think the U.S. has a lot to look back on and figure out that when this comes next time, we have to do better.
You know, obviously, in the last week, we've seen states, Texas, Mississippi is a couple of examples. They are now, you know, from the governor's office down, rescinding the statewide mask orders. Is that something that you find distressing, especially after everything you would have hoped we've learned in the last year?
Yeah, I just don't think of wearing a mask as such a deep inconvenience. I mean, you know, we ask people to wear pants. You know, why was this politicized? The mask helps a lot. And although we're near the end, every death is tragic.
I feel terrible about the fact that I should admit I'm not wearing pants now.
Well, don't go outside. You might infect somebody.
Oh, you know, it kind of puts it in perspective, right? I mean, because we've been grumbling. Oh, they're so uncomfortable. They're so stuffy. I mean, they're so inconvenient. So are pants, right? Like, I have a daughter who's like, Dad, I don't understand why you ever wear pants that don't have holes in them. It's like air conditioning. I'm like, I know. That's why I wear holes in my pants all the time, right? I mean, but most of you wear pants without holes, right? They're stuffy. They're warm. But you do it most of the time when you go out in public. Most of the time. Maybe we've not wore pants more often than less. But I mean, like, have we become so soft? Have we become so fragile that, like, this is, like, a major discomfort for us? I mean, maybe this is why we've struggled so much over the past year. So Paul, he has, like, a major discomfort. And what's interesting to me is people who sit in religious circles like this and, you know, settings like this, you know, people of faith often respond one of two ways whenever we have kind of a thorn in our side, we call it. You know, the first way we generally approach this, and if you're not somebody who's a person of faith, this might be why you don't want to consider faith, because you look at these, you're like, yeah, I don't, that's not my life right there. So we often respond in faith one of two ways. We're either very latent in our approach, very indirect, like, oh, woe is me. I guess this is the plight God has for me. I just got to take this. This is a thorn in my side. It's just the way God wants my life to live, which let me just say, Jesus never emulated that attitude right there. That never came out of the life of Jesus. Or we have kind of the flip, you know, kind of other end of the spectrum, which is kind of this cavalier approach to life. You know, like, man, I'm not going to let fear drive my life. COVID's not going to dictate my life. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. I mean, this is the freaking United States of America, the land of the brave, the home of the free, or the land of the free and the home of the brave. God bless America. Hallelujah, right? Like we get all worked up, which by the way, is like a terrible perverse confusion of spirituality and patriotism when we operate that way. And again, Jesus never captured, you know, or emulated that kind of spirit. And so what's awesome to me is how Paul actually responds here to the difficulty that he's in. He's like, three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. Now, this probably doesn't mean three literal times, all right? It's probably like repetitive, you know, language to emphasize, I mean, I've gone over and over, God, would you please take this away? Would you please take it away? Maybe it was like three seasons of pain that he experienced when he was shipwrecked, or three eras of his life. The point is, you know, Paul's like, I've pleaded with God. And maybe you can relate to this. Maybe you've experienced some pain, not just from the pandemic, but, you know, for some of you, you've experienced, you know, brokenness in your families and divorce and loss of a job and, you know, maybe some physical pain on other fronts. And, you know, as Scott said, I mean, the mental health challenge of this last year has just been enormous. And maybe you've just pleaded with God and you've just been like, God, I need you to take this away. And this thorn in your flesh has like been a genuine, you know, like tormenting of you. Well, you know, in Paul's case, it doesn't seem that God removes it. I mean, the good news, though, is he does get an answer to his prayers. And if we're honest, maybe that's kind of where we find ourselves in the most difficulty when we pray, when we plead, God, I need you to take this away, and we never get an answer. But the problem persists. But see, in Paul's case right here, he felt like God gave him an answer. And God spoke back to him. He said, you know, God kind of said, hey, I want to show you how you can think about your situation so you can actually navigate it differently. You've probably heard the phrase, you know, a change in perspective really can change everything. Well, Paul's about to introduce us right here to a change in perspective. Because his response, you know, when he begged God, you know, God, would you please remove this? They say, pleading with him three times. He said, but God responded. He said, but he, meaning God, said to me, look at this phrase right here, my grace is sufficient for you. And you're like, okay, well, what's God's grace in this situation then? Well, in Paul's case, God's grace is whatever Paul needed in that moment. That's what his grace is. In our context, God's grace is God's provision for whatever we need right now. It was just what he needed to get by in that moment, which let's be honest, that doesn't feel very good, does it? Because we're like, I don't want God's grace. I want it removed. I don't want like some extra energy to help me get through this. I want your power to remove it right now, God. But how many times have we experienced this where God just gives us just enough to get through? You're like, I don't want that. See, we want sunshine and pixie dust and rainbows all the time, right? But that's not what God's grace is. It's often just what we need to get by, just what we need to keep moving, just what we need to continue to move, period. Now, we all pray different prayers and have different things that concern us and, you know, different things that we pray about. And some of you right now might be praying about a new job that you're trying to, you know, locate, or maybe someone that you're trying to meet. Others of you might be praying, you know, man, for a new Lamborghini. Maybe you saw this article I saw recently, like Lamborghinis are like sold out. Did you see this? Like apparently all the wealthy people like bought up all the Lamborghinis because they don't have any way to spend all their money. So they just went out and bought all the expensive cars. And so I actually had a guy one time say to me, hey, could you pray with me, Kurt, so I could acquire this really expensive sports car? I was like, sure, I can pray with you for that. I can pray pray that you get a Lambo, like, as long as you'll be generous with it, you know, and let me go out on a date night. Once you get it, like, that'd be awesome, right? How sweet would that be? And so, but here's the thing. Sometimes God answers our prayers not with what we want, but with what we need. Because sometimes the Lamborghini's just not going to get the job done. And a Lamborghini is not going to fix our situation. And sometimes God gives us what we actually need instead of what we want. And so what is grace? Grace is God's provision for what we need. It's mercy. It's kindness. It's energy. It's sustenance. It's endurance to make it through another day. It's perseverance to be able to get through to the next season. I mean, and so God doesn't just give us what we need. God gives us what we need when we need it the most, because he's a loving father. And so Paul, God kind of speaks back to Paul right here. And he's kind of like, Paul, I hate to see you struggling like this. I hate this. And I'm going to answer your prayer, but it's probably going to be a bit different than what you're looking for and what you're hoping for. I'm going to give you my grace, which is sufficient for you. Meaning it's going to be enough, even though it may not be what you want. And so his answer that he got from God in this moment was, my grace is sufficient for you. Then he goes on, he says, for, and this is fascinating what he says next. He says, for my power is made perfect in weakness. To which we're like, yeah, but like, how about making your power like relevant to remove what I need removed right now, God? Like, how about doing that? God's like, that's not how it works. What do we want when we're in a difficult situation? Have you ever asked yourself that? What do we really want when we're in a difficult situation? Most of the time, I've discovered when I've talked to people, they want an explanation. Like, I just want an explanation. I want to know, like, God, why is this happening to me? God, how long is this going to be? How long am I going to deal with this? Where are we going? All right, that's usually what people want to know. And yet, I don't know if you've discovered this or not, but here's a huge thing to maybe, you know, stumble upon. God rarely gives us explanations. I mean, what's amazing to me for Paul right here, Paul never gets an explanation as to why he has a thorn in his side, thorn in his flesh. All God says is, listen, Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. And then he makes him a promise. He says, in your weakness, my strength is going to be perfect. My power is going to be made perfect in your weakness. But we don't like that because we want explanations. We don't want promises. So maybe one of the keys to navigating adversity is that we need to learn to depend on the promises of God instead of depending on an explanation from God. I mean, think about this right here. This is huge. What if we just depended on the promises? And you might say, well, okay, well, what are the promises? We've been talking about them all throughout this last, you know, year. I mean, there are things like God saying, he'll always be with us. And hasn't he? He's been with us thus far, right? He says, he'll never leave us. And he hasn't. He's been there. He says things like what we just looked at. He's going to show up and give us what we need, not only when what we need, but exactly when we need it. And just think back in your life, how many times of the last year have you had a moment where it's just like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I needed right here in this moment. But he also promised that he's going to use our situation to do something good through it. I mean, this is absolutely amazing. And if you're somebody who's not a follower of Jesus, if you're not a Christian, listen, you can get through difficult situations. You're doing it right now. All right, but what I don't quite understand is how you get through it, you know, without the faith and the hope that God's actually going to take whatever that difficult thing is and he's going to make something beautiful. He's going to redeem it. I mean, to know that he's going to use the difficulty in my life, even when I don't understand it, even when I don't get it, even when I can't comprehend it, he may not take it or remove it out of my life, but you can bank on the fact he's going to use it. And just because you and I don't understand it doesn't mean he's not moving, as we sung a few minutes ago. Even when I don't see it, even when I don't feel it, you're moving, because that's what God does. And so as we kind of wrap up, I want to leave you with a question this weekend. And this is kind of your homework this week, so you can, you know, take out your connection card if you want. You can mark it. You'll find the question there. But I want you to wrestle this question to the ground, because as we think about exiting the pandemic mindset, I think this is the defining question that will determine if we build with new bricks or if we go back to old ways. And so here's the question. You guys ready? Here's the question right here. The question is, am I better as a result of the pandemic, or am I bitter as a result of the pandemic? Am I better? Am I coming out better? Or am I coming out bitter? And one of the things I've been discovering over the past few months is, man, there is a large chasm between these two camps right here. There's a lot of people who've got better, who've experienced, man, I'm getting better, I'm growing, I'm getting to new places. And I've observed at the same time, there's a whole bunch of people who, man, there's a lot of bitterness. And I'm going to be honest, I mean, kind of like Scott, I've had to exit out of some conversations, some text strands, some group conversations. Voices have been a part of my life for a number of years, but I just had to say, you know what, listen, the ongoing bemoaning, the complaining, the, oh, we got to get our lives back. I'm like, I didn't know we lost our lives. You know, the crying foul of the missteps of leaders and health leaders and claiming conspiracy and lamenting of how much the pandemic's robbed me of life and, you know, our freedoms have been violated. I mean, all the sourness and the bitterness. I'm telling you what, you got to wrestle this question to the ground. Because we got to get, if you want to come out better, you got to decide, I've got to make a shift in perspective. Because you can either come out better or you're going to continue to be bitter. And so I encourage you to just get 15 minutes, 30 minutes and journal on this question this week. Has this season made me better or has it made me bitter? In fact, let me just share with you as I close what I wrote on this. Because I wrestled this to the ground about a month and a half ago. So here's what I wrote. I said, you know, perspective's everything. Has it been hard? Absolutely. Have many lost loved ones? Absolutely. Have I? Not yet. Has it been inconvenient? Absolutely. Has it been revealing about the nature of humanity? Absolutely. Have I seen the hand of God? Absolutely. Has it caused some moments of insecurities? I've realized how little control over of tomorrow I actually have? Absolutely. Has it reminded me of my humanity? Absolutely. Has it reminded me that there's a fragility to life? Absolutely. Has it caused me to dig into the order of my loyalties and my allegiances? Absolutely. Has it taken my life away? I honestly can't say that it has. I'm still here. I'm still kicking. In kind of a strange way, I'm actually grateful for the season. I've immensely enjoyed large parts of it. I've enjoyed the different pace. The lack of certainty has grown my trust. The challenges and hurdles have grown my resilience. The disappointment has continued to help me take steps in clarifying what my hope is actually in. The interruption has caused me to seek connection with encouraging people and silence the negative narratives. The isolation has inspired me to look for new ways to connect, new ways to serve my neighbors, new ways to get out of the box and be a blessing to people. The at-home time has allowed me to slow and cherish more deeply the very lives in my own home. Of course, perspective is everything. Have I lost something? Likely. Though I don't know that anything that I've lost was ever promised. Again, perspective is everything. Have I gained? Absolutely. Have I grown? Absolutely. Am I bitter or am I better? Definitely better. And I wouldn't trade anything for the last 13 months. I tell you what, if you will do this week, you're going to begin to weed out what's wrong and you'll clarify what's important. Answer the question, am I better or am I bitter? What kind of change in perspective do I need God to bring to me so I can build different as we come out of this? So this is your homework this week. And this is going to set you up for next week as we begin to look at seven things that will take us from kind of this PTSD, this post-traumatic stress that we've all experienced, to actual growth. You realize 80% of people that experience post-traumatic stress can actually get to a growth posture. So we're going to take a look at how that happens. Be very application-oriented. But right now, I just want you to think through, am I better or am I bitter? And this will set you up to be ready to move into some new territories. So we're going to sing a song called Miracle Power, and maybe the miracle power of God's grace isn't in removing something, but in giving us exactly what we need as we continue forward. So let's stand, let me pray for us, and then we'll sing together. Heavenly Father, I just want to thank you for our time. I want to thank you for the opportunity to begin to see light at the end of the tunnel. And God, I just pray that we would not rush too quickly to try to just fill our lives with everything that we used to know, but to take an inventory. Where are the empty spaces? Where are the fractures? Where are the vacant spaces where we need to build with new bricks, in new ways, with new patterns, new behaviors? God, if there's a perspective change or shift that's needed right now, I pray that you'd help that to happen. I pray that you just begin to help us see things differently, just like Paul. I pray that you would do your work in our lives and help us to see that you are here, we can trust you, you're going to give us what we need exactly when we need it. And in the midst of that, we're going to continue to see your hand in our lives. And we thank you for that. And we pray these things in your name.